on today's Run to the Top podcast.
Health is all about finding that balance. Dis-ease and sickness is about being out of balance in some form. And so much of wellness is trying to put ourselves and those dimensions of our mental self, our spiritual self, and our physical self back in order.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Today's podcast features Dr. Ruth Parker and Dr. Carmen Patrick Mohan, who have co-authored a book along with Jeff Galloway called The Women's Guide to Health, Run, Walk, Run, Eat Right, and Feel Better. The doctors use their insights as primary care physicians with their strong commitment in health education to lay out goals for us and to teach us how to achieve them. Wellness is what this book is about and why it was important to write. We'll meet Dr. Parker and Dr. Mohan in just a moment after a brief message from our Run to the Top sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by one of our favorite training apps, Strava. If you don't already know, Strava is the best route discovery and training log app. You can track all your workouts, runs, and other activities and use that data to find new places to run and train smarter. Now you also have the option of listening to Strava athletes on the new Strava podcast called Athletes Unfiltered. Every episode will feature amazing athletes, members of the Strava family, athletes like you and me with incredible stories to share. Later in today's episode, we'll share more about the stories and comebacks of three running heroes in the first episode. It's all there at runnersconnect.net/Strava. Today's show is brought to you by Fasciaware, a new sportswear innovation that helps you maintain good body posture and optimal alignment in your hips, knees, and ankles when running. I'll tell you more later in the episode, or you can head over to their website at fasciaware.com. Plus, if you enter RTTT in the promo box at checkout, you'll get 25% off your first order. That's fasciaware.com. Welcome back to the Run to the Top podcast. I am Stephanie K. Atwood, your host, and today we are featuring Dr. Ruth Parker and Dr. Carmen Mohan, who will be sharing details from their book, The Women's Guide to Health, Run, Walk, Run, Eat Right, and Feel Better. Welcome, Dr. Parker and Dr. Mohan.
Thank you. We're delighted to be here. This is Ruth.
Thank you so much for having us on today. This is Carmen.
Well, I'm looking forward to learning more about you as individuals and also more about your book. Ruth Parker, MD, MACP, is Professor of Medicine, Pediatrics, and Public Health at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. For over two decades, her work has focused on research, education, and policy efforts to advance our nation's health literacy. Her focus is on making what we need to know and do for health and healthcare understandable and doable. She is a lifelong athlete and has completed 28 marathons. Good for you.
Thank you.
Carmen Patrick Mohan, MD, FACP, is an internal medicine physician, urban homesteader, and marathon runner who prescribes food and exercises medicine. She works to foster change in healthcare delivery through internet technology, improved patient communication, and information access. Dr. Mohan specializes in cardiometabolic risk factor reduction with a focus on women. She is also a competitive runner and on a quest to complete marathons in 50 states and on seven continents. In their book, both doctors use their insights as primary care physicians and strong commitment to health education to lay out goals and create plans on and how to achieve them. The book emphasizes how their practice as physicians, experience as marathon runners, and commitment to health literacy helps us achieve fundamental health. While focusing on women, they also offer practical tips and strategies for all genders, ages, and levels of runners to become more fit and healthy. Thank you for being here to discuss your book and wellness focused on runners, Drs. Mohan and Parker.
Thank you. What a pleasure to be here.
Really glad to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that you're here with me today. So as you know, we start off with four basic questions, not directly related to your book, but interesting for our listeners to learn more about. Let's start with Carmen. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where do you live now? And what is your favorite running distance?
I'm 41. I was born on Fort Benning, Georgia, so I'm an Army brat. I have run in many of our 50 states because I was living there for 6 months to a year or so. And I live now here in Atlanta, Georgia. Hotlanta well deserves its name. And my favorite distance is probably the 10-miler, even though I do quite a few marathons to keep up with Ruth and Jeff.
So, Ruth, the same questions for you. Do you want me to repeat them?
I think I have them, but I'm not very hard to keep up with. So I'm one of those. I'm 63. I'm a full 63. I count every year as a blessing. I'll be 64 in April. So okay. I'm always happy when another one rolls around and yeah. grateful for one more year. Mm-hmm. So I'm 63, soon to be 64. I was born in Georgia in a smaller town, Noonan, Georgia, live here in Atlanta, and have practiced for just over 3 decades internal medicine in the large public hospital here in Atlanta.
Wow.
I am a lifelong athlete. Mm-hmm. I've been involved in playing sports, I guess, since I was three or four, and I still play competitive tennis. I played in college, and I also played field hockey in college and have been a part of running as long as I can remember, but not competitively except for a little while when I was in junior high and high school. Hmm. I did not start doing distance running and marathoning until I was 52. So that's, 11 and a half, 12 years ago.
Yeah, not that long ago.
And I think my favorite distance now, because I rarely, and I'm a walk runner. I've never run a marathon. And there are great runners that you know, I'm sure, that many of your listeners know, who remind me to tell people that I don't really run marathons. I walk run them. People like Joni Benoit will point to me and say, quit telling people you run marathons because you walk run them. And so I walk run marathons. And it's the only way I've ever done one. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the only way I ever will do one. And so likewise, my runs and my favorite distances are all walk run. I don't run continuously.
That's so interesting that you would distinguish between those, or that some people would distinguish between those. I have my own opinion about that kind of thing. And I think anybody who runs at least part of the distance can run, is running a marathon, but maybe it's just terminology, huh?
Right. I think you're exactly right. But anyway, that's what I do. And I would say, probably my favorite, if I go out and I've run 6 miles, I feel like I had a nice run, like on a regular basis. And mm-hmm. so I go out regularly and I'll run 6 miles. Like mm-hmm. I'm sure there's not a week that goes by that I don't do that 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Further, but that's kind of like, I guess that's probably my favorite because I do it the most.
Right.
And it's very familiar to my body.
Nice. Nice.
Well, I don't do some longer ones, but I have to say, like, that's just kind of, I don't know, in many ways in my mind, I don't know why, but that just sort of harmonizes with perfect.
Let's start with the term wellness. What does wellness actually mean from a medical perspective? So we're referring to your book and how wellness fits into that perspective.
This is Carmen. I'll just say that from my perspective, wellness for women in particular always means more than just physical health. It always incorporates how we feel emotionally, whether or not we feel connected to those we loved best of all. And I'd say also the fuel we're getting, not just your diet, but also your spiritual fuel. And when all four of those are present, you feel well, you feel
mm-hmm.
good.
Mm-hmm. It's much more of an overall concept and overall system than just one piece of our lives.
And I would say for women in particular, it's that feeling of connectedness and mm-hmm. feeling whole that most contributes to the sense of well-being.
Interesting. Ruth, do you have anything you want to add to that?
I would add, one of my favorite, I don't know if it's a metaphor, it's a view, it's one of my favorite things in the world is a Greek temple. Mm-hmm. And I think they're just absolutely beautiful. And sort of historically, and you're going to hear us a lot refer to medicine because we're both physicians and we've been at it a long time, but the Greek temple sort of embodies a lot to me about the history of medicine because the Hippocratic tradition of medicine came from the time that many of the beautiful Greek temples were built. Mm-hmm. And the Greek temple, they're beautiful. And the reason they're beautiful is because they're in balance. And the Greeks really valued having the balance of your mental self, your physical self, and your spiritual self, the things that Carmen just mentioned. So when I think of wellness, I think of balance and I think of beauty. And when you know, health is all about finding that balance. Dis-ease and sickness is about being out of balance in some form. And so much of wellness is trying to put ourselves and those dimensions of our mental self, our spiritual self, and our physical self back in order and having them all in good order. As Carmen said, they're connected
right. And
they're aligned. So the temple stands because it's in balance. You want to destroy the beauty, you destroy the balance. It's asymmetrical. But, you know, health is about balance and wellness is about all those components.
Indeed. Unfortunately, Beth, that's about well-being when we've got so much experience with feeling uncomfortable and seeing patients who don't feel that sense of well-being and
right. Feel
exactly like the opposite. Right?
Well, that was one of the questions that I had in general when I was reading your book and that you were both medical doctors is that sometimes there's a bit of a disconnect between the way people look at medical doctors and at wellness. So you've helped to clarify how those pieces kind of fit together for you as professionals.
I think the most important thing that we tried to do with this book is convince folks who don't feel well, who feel the joint pains as they get a little older, who feel like they're carrying a little bit too much weight and they feel uncomfortable sitting in their own skin, that walking and run walking is a great place to get started and to keep going.
And this was one of the questions I had for you, why you felt it was important to write the book. And so you answered part of that for us. Ruth, would you like to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think the other thing that comes to mind is I think Carmen and I really share a belief, and you know Jeff Galloway and you know his writings. You're mm-hmm. a writer as well, I know. But I think this idea that women are really important brokers, if you will, broadly
right.
for health in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do the choices and decisions they make about their own health matter, but it has a huge influence on their family. We know they make most of the family healthcare decisions for families. It impacts people in their neighborhood, their community, the school, the work environment. So we really, the reason we were targeting women with the book was really to say what you decide to do for yourself and the choices you make are influencing not just you, but there's really a social impact. And that's a very powerful and in many ways untapped resource.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really the purpose of targeting women with this. The other thing just was that we very much wanted to partner with Jeff, who's very well established and loved as a longstanding Olympian runner and coach. We wanted to take what we have learned as practitioners of general medicine for now decades, both of us, and link the evidence of what we know about very common health conditions
mm-hmm.
that most of us will experience at some time in our life with evidence mm-hmm. about how walk running, eating a healthy diet, sleeping a healthy amount can really help anyone toward the balance that is their own wellness.
Yeah, we really took the time to go through what's evident in the numbers and make it practical and make it a whole program that you can do that will predictably make you feel better.
And I did want to mention Jeff Galloway. He is a co-author with you on this book. We had him on the show about a month ago, maybe. So we got a lot of information on Runwalk, and we also had his wife on at the same time. And so there was a lot of information passed out in that interview on Runwalk Run, specifically. That's his version of it. We're not going to elaborate a lot on actually how to do Runwalk Run, but we're going to talk more about movement and fitness, and then, of course, nutrition and sleep and all of those things that you include in your book. So I wanted to take a little break from the talking about the book. And Dr. Parker, you are a lifelong athlete and have completed 28 marathons. You said you started running when you were 52?
I've been running as part of sports, I'm going to say since I was 3 years old, probably. I mean, I grew up playing sports in the yard, and I did compete some in track and field when I was in junior high and high school. Mm-hmm. In college I played varsity sports, but I did not, it was not in track and field or in running. I had always used running to stay in shape for other sports I was doing. And I would say for most of my life, I mean, I had been doing some form of running. So what happened was I was actually editing the health content of several of Jeff's books as a friend of his, as a physician. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, hey, Ruth, will you make sure, you know, what do you think? And so I was doing this, and he had actually invited me to speak with his marathon training program directors around the country. And I said, Jeff, I can't do that because I've never run a marathon. I can't stand up in front of a bunch of marathon trainers and runners and talk about doing a marathon because I've never done one.
Yeah.
So I was 51 at the time. And he said, well, you're in good shape and you run some. And he said, I'll give you a training program. Follow that. And you know the programs. You've covered them before. They're like these 30-week programs that we include in our book here that are his. He said, follow the program and then come run a marathon with me. And I literally thought, hey, that's great. This guy's an Olympian.
Yeah.
I can tell everybody for the rest of my life, I ran a marathon with an Olympian. So I can do this, you know, so I did this. And then the first marathon that I ran was one where he was, you know, sort of the lead, the celebrated voice of that marathon. And I'll be joining that race this year for my 13th year. That's my streaker win, actually.
Wow.
And I got hooked. You know, I started and I just thought, this is pretty amazing. And I see what this is all about.
Yeah.
I also saw, you know, the degree of determination and the discipline mm-hmm. that a lot of people have who end up doing distance. That was new to me at the age of 52.
Yeah.
I had not done a marathon. And, you know, it's a different animal.
It is, for sure. For sure. And what fitness goals do you have then for 2019? What running goals?
My running goals for 2019 are, you know, and I guess with every year, you heard me talk about my age. Number one, avoid injury.
Uh-huh.
That's a big one because I have been a victim of overrunning before.
Mm-hmm.
And I know as I age, as we all age, that it takes a lot longer to get over injuries.
Right.
So I don't want to be injured from overuse or from misuse.
Right.
And so I do try to pay attention. On the other hand, I'm now sort of running. I used to run sort of in that 25 to 35 miles a week. And I did cut back mm-hmm. to closer to 20 to 25 a year ago.
Okay.
So this year, just sort of steady, keep going. And I will do, I don't know, 3 or 4 half marathons this year. I don't know if I'll do a full marathon, but I'll do 3 or 4 half marathons. And then I keep that amount of running as my base.
And you run regularly. You just don't run those distances on a regular basis is what you're saying.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to keep up 3 or 4 half marathons a year, I do, you know, every 3 or 4 weeks, I'll do a 12 to 14 mile run.
Yeah.
Run, walk.
Right, right, right. And I appreciate that you're saying run, walk, because I've coached a lot of women and we use run, walk for a lot of the women, specifically in our training. And it's been injury prevention for sure. And also a confidence builder because anybody, once they get the understanding of the technique, then anybody can run walk for a long, long way. It's a lot different psychologically too than thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to run 26 miles. No, that's not the case. You've got to walk, you've got to run for 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever it is, and then you get a walking break.
And for me, I'm a professor, and so I work a lot with college and medical students, students in graduate school. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them are not distance runners.
Right.
They're very into the efficient mode of exercising. They may be fit, but they don't do distance work.
Right.
And so I can get them to go with me, and they're shocked they can go 10 or 12 miles.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'm run walking. So it's kind of fun for me.
Yeah.
And then I get to see how the look on their face is, like, are you kidding me? Did I really just do that one? I'm like, well, let's don't look at how long it took. But yeah, you did.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's great. So Dr. Mohan, also known as Carmen, one of your goals is to run a marathon on each continent and in all 50 states. Where are you with that goal?
Oh, I've hit 7 states so far. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I've repeated several marathons, so I'm still at 7. I just started this goal, actually, and it was Jeff who convinced me I can do it. He also convinced me I have until I'm 100 to do it. Uh-huh. So, you know, one a year.
Now, have you got any foreign marathons scheduled?
Yes, I'm thinking about, in terms of headed out and scheduled, no, but I'm thinking about heading down to Chile to cross off South America.
Okay, good luck. Good luck on that. And do follow through, because that's an important part of making these resolutions or setting goals. Okay, so let's go on to the book. While the title is Women's Guide to Health, there is a lot of crossover for men and children. And what are the distinctions that gear your book more specifically to women, and what sections apply to men and women the same?
With women, some of the special considerations are things that just make us reproductively different. So feeling like breast discomfort changing with our cycles, for example, if we still have them, and how to be more comfortable just with clothing choices and feeling confident shopping outside. I'd also say there's things that women talk about with me that they don't necessarily talk about with each other, like leaking urine, mm-hmm. particularly but in the postpartum period, right after a baby is born, or with weight gain that was undesired. Just when we have some issues with the pelvic floor, once menopause sets in, like those types of things need to be addressed, because the last thing that we want to have happen is, you know, a spot on the shorts when we're out. Things like that, dealing with that, coping with it, and not letting it be a barrier to being very active and being outside. And then finally, things like safety tips and how to deal with that unwanted honk as you run by, and that those types of things that really bother the solo woman walk runner, if you will. Mm-hmm. I think that those are the things that we address that are women specific. And then finally, there are some health problems in society that women deal with increasingly more than men. Mm. Maybe that's, we're finding out now in the health professions, maybe it's not exactly accurate that women suffer more depression and mood disruptions than men. Maybe mm-hmm. it's just that men don't approach us as much as they should. But we do talk about health concerns that affect women disproportionately. Mm-hmm. What do you want to say in terms of the heart health and metabolic conditions?
Underscore in, we took pretty much the 10 most common chronic illnesses that women are most likely to encounter in their life. And we looked at evidence around walk, running, and a healthy diet, and look at the impact of combining the CDC guidelines of a minimum of 150 minutes a week of mm-hmm. Physical activity with a healthy diet, and what's known about the impact of those. I'd say the other women-specific, you know, content area in there, really likewise relating to the life cycle and age, is postmenopausal women and bone health and the importance of weight bearing, especially postmenopausally for bone health.
Right.
You know, bearing your weight by walking or by walk running and the positive impact that has. True for men and women, but a greater impact for women than for men. But you're absolutely right to say that the content and the issues, as a matter of fact, there are many men that has spoken to us and said, hey, why is your book just for women?
The others of them say, hey, when are you going to write the men's guide to health?
Right. You know, I think that's a really interesting part of our culture today, because as much as women are making great headway, and to some extent, we've kind of ignored that men have issues to deal with in some of these areas as well, and they really aren't necessarily being addressed right now. It's, you know, it's kind of a change of the dynamic or something. Mm-hmm. It's appropriate. Yeah. Now, another part of the book, close to the end, actually, but it would fit in almost anywhere, was this concept: women who are run walkers become health brokers for families and neighbors. That was, I quoted that from your mm-hmm. book. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that earlier a bit as well. But I do think that this may be a difference in the way that women lead versus the way that men lead, in that women, if they're out there running, then people are going to look at that differently as far as, well, gosh, maybe I could do that. Or if yeah. women are shopping for their families, and believe me, I understand men do that as well. But, you know, in traditional kind of family situation, the women are the ones who get out there and shop. So, of course, whatever they're cooking could be what the rest of the family is eating, too. So talk about that some more.
Well, you know, that's something that I think struck Carmen and me just as observers of the habits of people. I mean, we've both been, you know, on the front line of listening to people and their stories and how it impacts them in their own lives, but also the lives within the family. And there's no question but that many, not all, but many women are very willing to talk about the social component of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there are men who will do that, but not as readily.
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea that the decisions that women are making, particularly proactive decisions about you know, being outside, being in healthy neighborhoods, looking to see, can I go out? Can I walk safely here? Can I walk run in this neighborhood alone at night? You know, can my children be outside? Can they walk to school? They're very active in those conversations at neighborhood levels, community levels, at school levels, mm-hmm. as their children are growing up. Not that men don't participate, but women more readily certainly will come in with questions and talk about it.
Right.
And so what we were trying to take advantage of in the book is this social network that exists between so many women who are out there raising their families, making decisions for themselves and their children, and then for family members when they're caretakers for people as they age. And I will say that is another strong target for this. I mean, we have a demographic tsunami on our hands with the number of people in our country who are aging.
Yeah.
I mean, it's supposed to be a good problem that we're living so much longer than we used to.
Right.
But with that comes, if you're old enough, the need to have caretakers.
Right.
And so many of those positions are being filled by women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the other kind of aspect to these women as brokers, Ruth and I would like to see women as ambassadors for our sport.
Nice.
You know, yeah. Stephanie, maybe you can relate to that feeling also,
mm-hmm.
that with Runners Connect and going to the top, you know, you're kind of intimidating when you're a Boston qualifier, mm. right? But think of when you think about yourself as being the person who can inspire,
uh-huh.
who and where to advise the beginners in your family to start, or where to advise your neighbors who are like, gosh, I wish I was like you. Mm. When those really small, informal, and intimate conversations happen, this book is a really great resource.
Indeed.
To be the ambassador, to claim that position. It's powerful. And we're hoping that your audience will use the book that way. Honestly, Stephanie.
Great. So I'm moving us on to health and the eat portion of your book. And I've got a quote here. It was, "The best things to eat for health promotion tend to be low in sugar, not processed, and made at home." I really appreciated that because I thought you were not trying to really promote any special kind of eating as much as you were saying, eat healthy.
Actually, you know what? Between the two of us, if we had to call the diet anything, I'd say it's a quantified Mediterranean diet. And what I really like about it is the flexibility in what's available to us. It's just about keeping our portion control as something we can see. Like, we use cups, like literally a measuring cup, like you bake with,
right,
to suggest our serving size. So even when you're, especially when you're eating out, which is when it's most important to control the portion size, we help our readers think in terms of cups of servings rather than what the serving of a particular type of something. Like if you can just use the cup and think across categories.
Right.
And so, you know, when I go around, when I'm speaking with large groups in professional settings, and when I'm asked about diet, what I say is, listen, the absolute most important thing is fresh fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. And if you can eat 5 cups of fresh fruits and vegetables a day,
mm-hmm, every day,
then you've reduced your risk for sudden death by 50%. For that day.
Wow.
And you don't need to wait for this to start working.
Right.
Isn't that nice? It happens right now, you know?
Yeah, that's really amazing. I went through the food part pretty thoroughly because I am very attached to, well, I love to eat, but I'm also really interested in nutrition. And certainly I use exercise as a way to maybe eat a little bit more, but the healthy part of it, the healthy part of eating is very important to me. And so I appreciated both your sentence that I just quoted, but also that you encourage this Mediterranean style of diet. But tell us more about why you feel it is a good way to go.
Well, it's honestly, I feel, and Ruth, you'll have to back me up on this, I feel like the Mediterranean diet has the most data behind,
mm-hmm,
it.
Absolutely.
Just the things that we're purporting, which, mm-hmm, is that if you eat according to this particular diet, then very often medical conditions are improved, mm-hmm, because of it. Mm-hmm. And those range, what we're linking is this particular diet to diabetes, pre-diabetes,
hypertension, cardiovascular,
all the cardiovascular diseases. And, you know, I want to say, there are others that are really great. Like for hypertension, the DASH diet is great, but the Mediterranean diet so fills in with the DASH, mm-hmm, that it works for such a large variety.
Right. Your book allows a lot of leeway on a lot of things and gives, I don't know, I guess I would say in one way it gives a lot of structure because you really do have your point system, which I'd like you to talk about, and you give some specific types of foods, vegetables and fruits that need to be eaten in fairly large quantities for most of us on a regular basis. But you also then give a lot of leeway in the way that people can eat and in allowing it in their lifestyles.
Oh, thanks for the compliment. That means a lot coming from you.
Oh, thank you. You know, I wanted to ask you specifically about diet soda and regular soda because those are such buzzwords these days, and they really have been shown to be a big problem with nutrition. So can you talk about those two things?
You know, I think that most of us would say that, okay, soda is a deduction in terms of the quality of a diet. Mm-hmm. But so often when we're on a diet, we think if we're drinking zero calorie something, then it doesn't change the way our taste buds act.
Right.
And we disagree with,
yeah,
that. We think that tuning the taste buds to salt and sugar are bad things to do, and that it's easier to eat in a more healthy way, mm-hmm, that limits weight gain and improves weight maintenance when you're not tasting sweet, whether or not there are calories involved. And so far, the small studies that have come across my desk also support that that is true.
Hasn't there been some research on that the impact on the brain, even with diet soda, has some very negative effects as far as weight gain, as far as diabetic response, I guess it's blood sugar, those kinds of things?
Yeah, well, whatever it is, it's not good. I've never seen anything tell me that it's a good idea that you go ahead and drink diet soda as opposed to water, mm-hmm. right? If you use water mm-hmm. as the control mm-hmm. in those studies, there's nothing that's going to beat good old-fashioned water.
Yeah, and you can flavor that water so it can have some fruit in it or something like that too.
You can make it bubbly. You can make it soda water.
Right, right. Ruth, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, I would agree. I think that's really a good summary.
Okay, let's move on to calories. How do calories fit into this mix? And if we want to maintain our weight or if we want to lose weight?
So, Ruth, I think that the best thing that we've done in this is to help people simply record in longhand their meals mm-hmm. as opposed to thinking about calories. Mm-hmm. So, basically the argument to be made that you don't need an app for that, if you will. You don't need to get fancy with it. You just need to actually write down what you're eating because that's a way of seeing the nutritional density mm-hmm. or lack thereof. Mm-hmm. And so while we provide a range of calories dependent upon how active and how much exercise you're getting and what your goal is, ranging from as low as 1,200 and working up to as much as 1,800 kilocalories provided, and that's based on the age of woman that we're talking about, and the more active you are, the more you need depending on your weight balance goal. Really the best thing that the book helps us see is that when you write in longhand, it triggers your brain to help you eliminate the things that you didn't need, like that one piece of brownie that cost you all those calories, for example.
Mm-hmm. You have training in, I think in nutrition mm-hmm. and as it's very complicated.
Ugh, yeah.
It's a really complicated, and I will tell you my lens as a primary care physician is that the vast majority of patients and people do not understand this.
Right.
And so this whole thing about health literacy that I'm kind of wedded to, mm-hmm. I can't think of, I mean, it's less than 10% of the time that you see any kind of physician today when they don't say, oh yeah, and by the way, make sure you get some exercise and eat healthy.
Right.
Well, who tells you how to
right.
do that? The steps of it. So what we tried to do was make it clear how you do these things. And trying to take everyone and say, let's teach you about the nutritional content of all that you can eat, how to count calories. You'd spend the rest of your life trying to figure that out.
Oh, yeah.
And so what we tried to do, and I give Carmen incredible credit here because she's an engineer by training. Mm. And she organizes her life and her family's mm-hmm. life the way you see this laid out in the book. Mm-hmm. This is what Carmen does.
Yeah, well, you know, I do it this way because I have had health problems that were related to weight. Mm-hmm. And I have had to try to figure out nutritional information. Mm-hmm. And this is part of what I came up with when I was struggling mm-hmm. after the birth of my two daughters with, you know, weight that just wasn't coming off, despite being a very active runner and a marathoner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So it's like, I think what we're just doing is making a structure that you can play with and then test against to see what works for you on a practical basis.
Right. Well, I love that you have a portion in there about that you have to eat 4 cups of vegetables every day and that no more than one of those cups can be potatoes. So, you know, and some of it needs to be green. And that is such useful information because people don't necessarily understand how all of those pieces fit together or that 4 cups, oh my gosh.
Yeah, a lot more than we realize, uh-huh, right? Uh-huh.
All right, I'm going to move on to red meat and your reasons not to eat it.
Well, red meat's been identified as a carcinogenic source. Mm-hmm. Depending on where you get your meat, it can cause cancer. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not a fan of it, you know?
I know, of course, with the paleo stuff these days that there's so much interest in meat of any kind, including red meat. And I appreciated that you said the cancer part there, because it seems to me that it's possible if people do their research, they might be able to eat red meat. But in general, they are, you know, they're definitely looking at something that, because it takes so long to develop, then it just has more and more chance of having bad stuff in it.
And I think it's much more worthwhile to have a system mm-hmm. of thinking about what food choices to make when you're on the
right.
go. So if you just take it off, so you don't have to ask yourself all these research questions about where these animals were raised and how they were treated, it just, you know, we're really looking for a simple
right.
way of eating the right,
right
way.
Yeah.
Consistently.
I think the other yeah. thing is it's true to the, you know, original description of the Mediterranean diet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, red meat is not to be absolutely excluded,
right.
but it's not to be eaten very
yeah.
often.
Yeah.
And so I think sort of having just kind of like be nice to yourself in all of this. Like, yeah, like there can be a few little wiggles at the side.
Right.
And, you know, if you eat red meat once a month, I mean, like, okay.
Right.
Or if you have a glass of wine
exactly.
at dinner, it's okay. food is not punishment.
Yeah.
That's what
no,
Ruth always
no.
says.
Yes.
That food is not punishment.
Yeah.
It's meant to be enjoyed. It's just... We so often do it. The food environment in our country is not conducive to health. And so we all need a rubric for thinking about the way we choose. And if it's too complicated, it's not useful.
Agreed. Now let's talk about fat, including butter, because certainly that has turned around over the decades, right?
You feel like a pat of butter on your toast, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's also because what is in the non-butter?
Right.
You know, if you like that flavor, I mean, do you really want to get up in the morning and put olive oil on your toast? I don't.
I put avocados on my toast.
Well, yeah. But, you know, like what's there not in season? Or,
oh,
you know, what,
I know, I know. What if they came from Chile? I don't know,
yeah,
if,
or
you know
whatever.
if they grow in Chile.
So there again, I think it's sort of the clarity and the purity, but not a lot mm-hmm. of it. But it doesn't take a lot of butter to give the flavor, and you're more likely to get to simple ingredients. I mean, in general, keeping what's in what you eat simple
yeah.
is a good idea. I mean, we know that all the Michael Pollan's, you know, eat food. Yeah, what is food? Food
and, you know,
grows.
You know, you'll see these fads, like coconut oil is just so much better than butter. And then the fad goes, and then the great big studies come out showing actually it's equivalent.
Right.
You know, it's equivalent amount of fat that's, you know, bad for you in large quantities.
Yeah.
You know, but like, again, food is not meant to be punishment. That's nowhere near where we're coming from. Instead, we're coming from what can you do on your end so that you don't have to see doctors like us.
I like that you allude to the whole social part of it too. You know, that food is a social thing, and sitting down and eating with your family or sitting down and eating with your friends is a huge part of wellness.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think that we have gone in almost the opposite direction with food, where, you know, you have a family that everybody's eating something different and they're not eating at the same time. And it's the
eating in the back of the car on their way.
Yeah. The social component is also an important part of food. Now talk a bit about dairy and also talk about eggs. I was reminded that eggs are not dairy, even though they're in the dairy case. So, you know, talk about those two, dairy and eggs.
We decided to make the distinction between, like protein sources, right? And eggs are a really nice, cheap way of getting in
mm-hmm.
protein. And we so often think of eggs as cholesterol-inducing when really, you know, for a large body of people, they can be quite healthy and really cheap and so easy to take along when you
right.
travel in the hard
right.
world, fashion. It's just, they're such a versatile protein source. And our finding, especially at the Hello Health Clinic, which is where I work, when you involve any protein source, whether it be a nut, an egg, or an animal muscle, that with whatever other kind of vegetable or fruit, then you feel a lot less hungry and more satiated as you go about your day. And so if you have a weight concern and that's something, then an egg is a very versatile way of taking it with you, right? Versus cheese. So, or dairy like yogurt. Mm-hmm. So that fat component to the yogurt or the cheese is something that we need to limit. It's not something we want you to avoid completely because that part of dairy has so much calcium and we're concerned about women's bones. So it's a part of the diet, but a limited part of the diet for that reason.
And what about heart rate? I know I'm away from food here, but I wanted to talk to you about heart rate and also about sleep because those are the heart rate part is more like if people are run walking, are they going to get their heart rate up to a point where that's going to be beneficial fitness wise for them? I'd like you to discuss that just a little bit. And then also talking about how important it is to get sleep.
So I personally do not monitor my heart rate. I know, and I really distinguish sort of what our book is about and where we went with this book from the elite athlete who's really training for time and way beyond sort of the kinds of things that we cover in depth in
this
book.
Right, and let's just clarify, you're Ruth.
Yep. Yeah, I'm Ruth. Yeah. So, and I recommend that anyone who is training for time and for an elite status or a highly competitive status really needs to be in touch with good books or good coaches who can help you with your fueling, with where you are cardiometabolically to make sure you're getting in a good fuel for that, that when you're pushing yourself on time, that you're pushing yourself in a safe way, especially as you age. I think that's really important. I don't recommend someone starting in their 60s and going out on a track or somewhere to see if they can run a 6-minute mile. If they don't do that, that's not a good idea. It's not a good thing for your heart to start there. So this is very different than where we are.
Yeah. And this is Carmen, you know, generally the mistakes that beginners make is that they overdo it and they huff and they puff, as Jeff would say. And so, you know, we're more concerned with them being active at all. And then also in general, we want those lower heart rates to make sure that we're doing fat burning as opposed to burning off muscle.
And doing it for longer. So for instance, with the walk run and with the intervals that are recommended, absolutely your heart rate will go up. And the walking intervals are short enough that you're going to maintain a higher heart rate during your walking phase. And that's why the distance that you cover and the endurance and going for longer does give you different cardiometabolic impact than for example, doing a compressed high intensity physical activity for 12 minutes. You know, so this is all about, I mean, depending on how you want to think about it, there's a very big difference in what you're doing by engaging in something for 45 minutes at a lower intensity with variable intervals than doing high intensity only for 12 minutes. What we know about the human body, and what I'm always reminding all the young people that I work so much with in medicine, because I've been a part of it as well, we would all like to have efficiency in what we do. There is not an efficient way to train for endurance other than engaging in it. that seems to be a hard lesson for some people. So I cannot, in 30 minutes, compress the same thing at a metabolic and at a cellular level into my mitochondria, into my cells. There's nothing I can do for 30 minutes that will impact those cells and mitochondria the exact same way doing something for an hour and a half will.
Gotcha.
Because you're calling on different systems to engage.
Right.
And there is something that can happen. I'm not saying that you can't get something out of short burst of activity. And they're absolutely a good idea. get up, walk around, do, you know, whatever you want to do. I'm all about that. But don't think that you're going to train for a marathon in 12-minute burst.
And also, to your point earlier, Ruth, with the goal of remaining injury-free, which is crucially important with our lives. I can't be injured. I have two kids I got to pick up, literally. I have to pick them off the floor and take them places. I cannot be injured. So the risk, the higher risk of injury with those high-intensity workouts is just not one that I'm often willing to take.
And I think for most of us who are athletes, and maybe you're the same way, as we age, one thing we know for sure, injuries will happen. Overuse does happen. The older you are, the longer your recovery.
Absolutely.
And so sort of learning to be smart about that. I mean, I am much wiser about that than I was 20 years ago or 10 years ago. You heard me say it was my goal.
It's a really strong point of the book to emphasize that the body builds itself when it is at rest, and that our training schedules and programs all emphasize that you have days when you are completely off, and the reasons why that those days are particularly crucial as we age.
Just like sleep, you know, underscoring, and, you know, many people are now underscoring the importance of sleep, but sleep is also when our bodies heal.
Right.
And I would say most of us don't sleep that well or enough, probably. Mm. And we certainly live in a do society,
right?
We all have to do. And so underscoring the importance of sleep was really, you know, something that we felt it was really important to highlight that. And there's no question but that, you know, this eating habits, stress, anxiety, there's so many things that are correlated with poor sleep patterns. And so we do spend a section of the book, and if you will, we prescribe making sure that you're getting a healthy amount of
sleep.
I like that. That's fundamental.
I like that. Now, we are going to be changing gears here and move into the final kick, but I want to give you, both of you ladies, a chance to share with us anything that we need to add into this conversation before we change gears.
You know, it's very important for us all to recognize that when we have a system for health and a system for thinking about it, it's so much easier to treat ourselves and to get the benefits that our bodies have to offer. And so just recognizing that all of these things are interrelated, that the run-walk programs that we propose help you get more efficient sleep, that if you're dealing with something like depression, those longer walks are vitally important to as an adjunct to your medicine for depression, that it's all related. So often as health professionals, we like to think in silos. So, you know, Stephanie, you're the nutritionist and, you know, I'm the heart health woman, you know, it's just, I don't know. I think that it's something to keep in mind that you need a holistic way of thinking about every part of you.
Ruth?
I think, you know, one of the motivators for me in putting this together and working with Carmen on it was, I've seen so many people who say, my doctor told me I'm bone on bone and I can't run or I can't walk. No, that's a myth. And what I would say is if you've been told that, you may indeed have some issues with cartilage or with joints and no question about it. But find someone who will work with you and with you and your goals.
Yes.
And I can't stress that enough. I mean, be they in medicine, be they in whatever, if you find someone who is physically active and engaged and has healthy behaviors themselves that you admire, they're probably going to be better at helping you to find those yourself. And so I really encourage people when they find themselves in a situation that it doesn't feel like where it is they want to go, to think about what you can do to get with someone who will encourage you to meet goals that you may have set for yourself.
In addition to being one of the most fun and informative apps to track your runs, Strava is now adding a podcast to their support of runners. Strava is free to use whenever you go for a workout, and now, for those long workouts, they have added a podcast called Athletes Unfiltered. The podcast features stories of athletes around the world, just like you and me, and we're all part of the Strava family. I had a chance to listen to the first episode and loved it. My workout time flew by as I listened to the amazing stories each of the interviewees shared. The first episode is about three different runners who have overcome major obstacles to return to running after life-changing events took away their ability to run and, to a great extent, took away hope of living life the way they understood it pre-trauma. Their stories were incredible, to say the least, and inspired me to work a bit harder and be extremely grateful for the small problems, aches, and pains that I might whine about. Join Strava in their venture into podcasts with Athletes Unfiltered. I'm sure your workout will fly by as you listen and learn. Just go to the link at runnersconnect.net/Strava to listen today. Today's show is brought to you by FasciaWear, a new sportswear innovation that helps you maintain good body posture and optimal alignment in your hips, knees, and ankles when running. There are two reasons why I'm excited about FasciaWear. One, the fact that the idea is based on years of expertise and research working with athletes to overcome and avoid posture-related injuries. And two, the feeling I get when I'm wearing FasciaWear. It just makes you want to go for a run immediately. When you first wear FasciaWear, you instantly notice how supportive it feels to your body, making you stand upright almost like you gain an extra inch in height. It is amazing how something so lightweight and elastic can give you that amount of support. FasciaWear makes it easier to concentrate on and practice proper running technique even when you start to get tired because of the extra notch of support you get from it. What I also love is that they offer a 30-day, no questions asked, money-back guarantee. This way, you can take FasciaWear for a test run and simply return it if not satisfied. If you want to give FasciaWear a try, you can get 25% off when you use the code RTTT. Just visit the website at FasciaWear.com and enter RTTT in the promo box at checkout, and you'll get 25% off your first order. That's FasciaWear.com. Welcome back with Dr. Ruth Parker and Dr. Carmen Mohan, who have been discussing their recent book titled Women's Guide to Health. We are approaching the final kick. Ladies, are you revved up for the final kick?
I love the finish line.
The finish line is good. Okay, let's start with you, Carmen, and then we'll give Ruth a chance too. What is a favorite local training run in your neighborhood? Tell us enough about it so that we, if we come to visit your area, that we would be able to find it and take a nice run.
Oh no, Ruth, I got the easy layup. I'm going to choose the Beltline. Is that what you're going to choose?
No, I can't be another.
I live very close to the Atlanta Beltline, which is this new pathway that basically circumvents the city. And you can run for miles and miles into some of the best parts of the city, including Piedmont Park, which is had the same landscape architect as Central Park.
Wow.
And so it's beautiful. It's worth running to and running around and then visiting the playgrounds and a track called the Active Oval where I like to do my interval repeats. So in order to find the Beltline, just type in Beltline into Google and you'll see all the different places. To
Beltline in Atlanta, right? In the city of Atlanta?
The Atlanta Beltline.
Okay, sounds good. Ruth?
So I like to go out my door and just start. And I live in a neighborhood called Druid Hills, which is one of the oldest neighborhoods in Atlanta. It was laid out by Olmsted, who also laid out Central Park in New York. And it's full of Druids, small hills. They're not too big. And it's beautiful. So I love being able to go out my door and run my neighborhood, which is full of enough streets that I can easily find my little 10K path.
Nice.
That I do over.
So how are we gonna get there? Where could we park to start?
Druid Hills, Atlanta. The CDC, Centers for Disease Control, and Emory University sit within Druid Hills.
All right, those both sound good. So how about a favorite running or running related book? And of course, we already know that you have a wonderful book out there, but another one. Let's start with you, Carmen.
So do I get two picks? The one book I want to have, I want an author to write one. And then, of course, Okay. Well, so I want Eleanor Fish of the Healthy Runners community to write her book. I've been asking her to do that for years. So I hope she'll do that. She's into mindful running, and I like her meditative practices sitting in conjunction with running. I think she's pretty
Eleanor
cool.
Eleanor Fish.
Eleanor Fish. She does Run Wild retreats, and she does the Healthy Runners community, and I think she's amazing. Okay. So Eleanor, if you're listening, there's your book.
Wait. Okay.
But of course, Jeff and Barb have a new book out about half marathon running for women. I think it's phenomenal. It's great training. I like the half marathon distance since there are so few 10 milers.
All right. And Ruth.
So I think Running to Your 100 is one of the greatest books on running that I know of, Jeff's book. In it, it has the story of his mother, who was the last final runner in the Peachtree Road Race. Jeff was the original winner of the Peachtree Road Race, which is the largest 10K in the world, actually. And he was the winner of the first one. And, you know, he's obviously a very beloved Atlantan because he's an Olympian and because he was the first, you know, winner of that race. But his mother, after having metastatic cancer, was in her 80s. And in the last year of her life, she ran the Peachtree and the street cleaners waited.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's sort of a tribute in that book. I had edited the health content of that book, and the book came out right around the time of the 2,500-year anniversary of the original Greece Marathon. And so I went to and ran that marathon with Jeff and Barb. We started at the end of it. The race was limited to the same number of people who fought in the Battle of Marathon. And so I just have such fond memories of that. And at the back of that race, where we started, we were the last people to cross the start line, were a group of probably 20 or 30 Europeans who were all over 85.
Whoa.
And I have to say, we all finished the marathon. That was one of the most inspirational things that I've ever been a part of in my life. To see that many people in their 80s and 90s who were running a marathon, and one that was that historic. So I have to say, you know, you ask about international marathon, but I will never forget, you know, the Olympic Stadium coming into that in Greece, seeing their Acropolis on the hill and finishing and then waiting around. And I mean, hey, it wasn't that long after me, but seeing those people cross that finish line and realizing that there are so many people in their 80s and 90s that are still doing
amazing
distance and see distance engagement as a way of life.
Well, humorous story. Next question here. Who wants to start?
Well, I have a funny one. This is actually kind of crude and funny, so I know everybody will listen when they hear that. And this is, you know, you've heard us talk a good bit about the Galloways. They're our friends, and many people love them and know them. But I was running Disney one year with Barb. And Barb, people often see Barb and me running or see us as friends, and they'll say, oh, you're sisters. I said, no, she has better legs than I do. She does. But we're kind of similar in age, height, similar haircuts, and we laugh a lot. We cut up a lot, but we were running Disney. I can't remember how many years ago this was, maybe six. Anyone who ran the Disney where it was freezing would remember it, because that's usually in January. It's coming up this weekend, and it's usually like lovely weather in January down at Disney. You run through the major parks. It's beautiful. You know, it'll be higher 50s into the 60s, sometimes up to 70s. Sun's out. It's really a beautiful race. Well, this year that we were running, it never got above freezing. So all the water stations, all the sloshy water on the ground, frozen solid, ice everywhere. We were freezing because we didn't know it was going to be as cold as it was. So we're all running in garbage bags and in everything you can find on the ground and running along. Well, so what happens? You know, and we both did have on tights. We finally, both of us had to pee. Okay, so I don't know where we are, somewhere 18, 20 miles, whatever. And we're so cold. And we both kept saying, okay, when is this going to happen? Because that means that you're going to have to pull your pants down. It's so cold outside, you know? And so here we are. And finally, we just said, okay, can't go any further. We're going to do it. We go over the side of the road, and both of us have on running tights, right? And we pull down our running tights, and I look over, and here's Bargelli. She's got on underwear. Why are you wearing underwear on your running tights? So we started this laughing thing about tights and underwear or no underwear. And we came from, we had this entire group of people around us, and it carried us for the last 6 miles of the marathon, the debate about running tights and whether or not you wore underwear. So anyway, that's my funny story.
That's a funny story. Carmen, can you top that?
I can't top it. I can add the story about running with Barb, which is really fun.
Okay. I'm ready.
So I ran last year's JG 13.1 with Barb Galloway, one of the highlights of my running career, I'll say. And it was because she didn't have Ruth as an option. Ruth wasn't able to run it that year. And so I'm running with Barb, walking, and we're doing her intervals. I think she was doing like 15, 30s or 30, 15, something like this. Okay, we're doing some ratio that I've never done before. And I'm just there to like listen for Barb's wisdom. And I guess I was being too quiet or something. We had finished kind of chatting up about Brooke and Ruth and all this. And then she goes, you know, Carmen, I don't know if I can run with you anymore. I'm missing Ruth because I rely on her and all the whining and complaining she does. And I was like, okay, what do you want me to talk about? She's like, oh, anything, but come on.
The truth comes out. All right. Well, I don't know what to say after that, but we are getting way over time here. So I want you both to give contact information and how our audience can find your book and get in touch with you about the many resources you offer for fitness, nutrition, and overall good health.
So I am Ruth Parker, MD, Professor of Medicine, Pediatrics, and Public Health at Emory University. And my email is rpark, the number 0, the number 1, at emory.edu. We have our book available on our website, which is herprescriptions.com. You can find it described, you can see an overview, and you can order it from there. It's also available at Barnes & Noble, at independent booksellers, and at Amazon.
Carmen.
You could find me online at the Hello Health Clinic, and I'm the CEO and founder of that clinic. So it's relatively easy to find me on LinkedIn as Carmen Mohan, M-O-H-A-N. My email address is carmen at hellohealthtoday.com. Please look up our website, herprescriptions.com, for the free downloads and all the book has to offer.
Well, we are at the end of our interview. Be sure to follow us at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB. Please subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. You'll be notified every week when the new episode is published. Thank you, both of you doctors.
Thank you.
Pleasure being with you today.
Wishing you much health and happiness in your own lives and in those people that follow your guidelines. You definitely have a lot to offer, and I love your attitude about health, wellness, and getting out there and moving on a regular basis. And finally, thank you, each of you, our listeners, for joining us today. We'll be back next week with another great talk to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.